When you woke up this morning, Ellen, what's the first thing you did?
It's a wonderful day. I like me, this wonderful day. I surround myself with pure white light of love. All is in divine order. I live in my ideal spirit, mind and body. I'm whole and perfect. I'm divine, I'm pure, I'm beautiful. I'm independently wealthy.
Okay, basta. Now, why did you say those things?
Because that is my nature.
Why did you say those things?
I affirmed my nature, my reality.
You affirm the truth about yourself. And why did you affirm the truth about yourself?
Because that's my inner knowingness, that's my nature.
Why did you confirm the truth about yourself? Why did you speak happy thoughts about yourself? Why did you say, I am whole and perfect, I am wonderful? Why did you say that? Why?
Because so it is.
You said that because you were affirming and confirming the truth about yourself.
Right.
You have chosen, not that you must, if you don't, you won't, but you have chosen to affirm these things every day. Now, Ellen?
Yes?
I want you to go into town. So, what's the first thing you think of doing?
I am an idea driver.
Well,
I surround my car with my pure white light of love and I have a wonderful trip, a successful trip, enjoy my trip.
Those are beautiful things. But what's the first thing you do? Now, you don't know that you're doing this, but you're doing this. What's the first thing that you do? You affirm, I am going to take my car.
Okay.
In other words, your car is there and it functions, right?
Yes.
And then, boom, you know, just, of course, naturally. What else? You think my car wouldn't function? You think my car wouldn't work? When Sylvia goes in town, she doesn't even think about her car. She just goes out there and gets in her car and says it's expected to function, you know?
Well,
that's what your purpose is. Now, if, Sylvia, you turn on the ignition and nothing happens, then what do you say? Ah!
All is in divine order.
Ah! But if you had said all is in divine order before you even thought about going with your car, what would happen?
Then everything is in divine order.
You put a power in motion. You put a thought in motion.
Yes.
Now, Ingeborg, when you get your go-kart here and you got scooting around in it, do you say it functions perfectly?
Oh, yes.
And do you say the brakes are here?
Yes.
And you let the brakes off so you can go and you put the brakes on when you want to stop?
I do.
Then you do. Why do you do that?
Why, that's the correct procedure in using it.
That's right. It's a correct procedure in using your cart. Now, what if you didn't do that?
Then I would not have the advantage to move forward with security.
You would not have the advantage of moving around in security. Okay. Now, do you mean security is not always there?
Security is always there, yes. But it is up to me to put the cause into motion.
The cause into motion to do what?
That all is in divine order.
And that the security is there for you.
And
it's all in divine order, that's true. But more particularly, the security is there for you. So when Ingeborg gets out of her bed and she's got a sleepy head and she's going to go to the bathroom, and so she takes her truck, her 18-wheeler. She takes her little vehicle here.
Rolls-Royce.
Her Rolls-Royce, pardon me. And she drives into the bathroom with it, okay?
Yes.
Now, do you expect it to function?
Yes.
Do you expect to find the brakes where you expect? Do you just have them in your consciousness? And do you mentally say, oh, the brakes are here. But see, my hands are now on the proper position here. Everything's okay. Oh, you plunge fall flat on your face, because your Rolls Royce would run away without your hands on the brakes, right?
Yes.
And so you mentally, intuitively do these things. You see, this may sound silly that I'm talking like this and talking about this, but if Ingeborg were so stupid as to not put the cause in motion that her Rolls Royce was under her control, she's too sleepy. She gets out of bed, you're half asleep, as people say, you know, we're all asleep, and reaches out for the thing, and then what happened? It runs out of the room on her because she has touched it and pushed it, and so it runs away. What is the matter with you? You're supposed to wait for me. Wait, wait. And her Rolls Royce goes scooting away at her. Okay, now, whose fault is that? She didn't stop and think. When Ingeborg wakes up in the morning or any time and she throws her feet onto the floor, she says, I am in control. I don't want to fall on my face. I'm in control. I want to get to the bathroom and do my duty. I'm in control. If she mentally doesn't have those thoughts in her mind, her Rolls Royce is going to scoot away on her, and also she will slip on a rug, and of course they'll get the whole place carpeted here, but she'll slip on a rug. She'll fall because she thinks she's going to slip on a rug.
Yeah.
She thinks she's going to be unstable. She thinks, but Ingeborg is playing the game in the right way. She says, I am stable. I know what I'm doing. I don't go around with half-cocked head. I'm full. I know exactly what I'm doing, and I'm doing it perfectly because I'm in charge of me. Now, when Sylvia goes out to her car and she says, oh my God, where did I park it? What parking lot did I park in? I wasn't paying attention when I got out of the car and went into the store. Was I in the back of the store or the front of the store, yeah, you know? And was I on the side of the store? And there was a big, beautiful car parked right next to me. It'd be really easy to find. You know?
Yeah, then that's not anymore there.
That big, beautiful car pulls away. Well, you see, you have to be in charge of your life every single moment.
Yeah, that's the point.
Not because it's terrible, but because that's part of the game.
Yeah.
So, Sylvia looks up in the sky, and she sees a bird passing by. She says, I'm under that bird. She sees a sign up on the pole. It says B4.
Yeah,
and so this is lot number B, and it's area number 4. So she says, yes, B4. And then she gets out of the store, and she says, now, where did I park? And she says, B4 keeps coming in my mind. What I know it was before I came in the store, but what's the place? Well, it's before you came in the store. Well, what's the place? B4. You see, we can sometimes forget. We forget and we think, you know, why do these ideas come into our head? They have to come in relative to what we're doing. Now, we think that's silly. We think that's silly talk, and we know that it's true because we've all done silly things like that. And you go to the airport parking lot, and you really can have yourself a figure out because there's so many, many areas. And well, anyhow, we are in charge of our thoughts. And if we don't take charge of our thoughts, our Rolls Royce is going to run away on our little walker is going to walk away on us. If we don't take charge of our thoughts, we're going to get out of the bed on the wrong side. And Sylvia thinks she's at her house, and she's at the monastery, and she has her special bedroom here at the monastery. Now, you go ahead and try to get out on the wall side, you know, and you fall out the window. But you see, you have to always keep your mind alert. When you go to sleep, okay, go to sleep.
I'm peace.
I'm peace. But the minute you wake up, don't say, I'm going to go to the bathroom, I'm going to go get a drink of water, I'm going to... You know, you don't do that. You say, "Buck, I'm awake." Because when you're ready to go back to sleep, all you do is say,
"I'm peace."
I'm peace, and plutch, you're back into sleep.
But you know, since I'm doing that, I'm sleeping so well.
I know.
I really sleep well.
You are putting the cause in motion for well sleeping, for sleeping well, and You are in charge.
Yeah.
You're in charge. Now, Ingeborg, she went into the hospital for a couple of days, and when she was in the hospital, she couldn't figure out which side of the bed to get out on, because they keep giving her different beds in different rooms, and the bathroom is at a different location, and it's like you go into a hotel, you know. You say, my God, where am I? and you look around and you say, I had two beds in my bedroom, and here there's only one. You know, what's this all about now? Where am I? And it has to be Paris, because it's Tuesday. You know, you have little reminders of things that you're doing. But we are in charge of our thoughts. And we want to be in charge of our thoughts here. Now, Ingeborg, when it's time for meals, what do you do?
I get ready to come to the table.
You said you get ready. What does getting ready mean?
To wash my hands.
Yes, to wash yourself. Yes. But the thing is, what else?
And I normally I am in my bed or in my
chair. No. You wash your hands, but the thing is, after
home.
You come to the table.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I mean, all the intricacies that you do, you know, how you blow your nose and how you put on the powder on your face and how you try to take off the this here and
you
comb your hair and you know, that's all part of a game. But the thing is, first, you determine you're going to wash your hands and then come to the table. Okay, you come to the table and you come in your Rolls Royce, in your go-kart, you know. And so you get to the table, and what do?
You sit down.
I prepare the chair.
You pull the chair out so you can sit in it. They're on rollers, and it's nice. These are real comfortable chairs we got around our dining room table here. Okay, and then what do? You sit down.
I sit down.
Now, do you let go of your Rolls Royce before you touch your chair or after you have touched your chair?
Before,
because, and then you're stable, and then your chair is all set, and you turn it out, and you sit in it. Now, Ingeborg, what if you only turned it halfway out, and you sat down on the arm of the chair?
Well,
and it wouldn't be very comfortable, would it?
No.
And that can happen, can't it?
And, well, this morning...
Not saying
anything. No, stay with my story. That can happen, can't it? Okay, so... You think before you act. No matter whether you are on tippy top or whether you're on the bottom, you think before you act. If you don't, you're going to pay the price. Because if you sat on the arm of your chair and then the chair started spinning and you'd go head over tails and you'd sit on the floor and you'd say, how did I get down here? You got down here because you didn't stop and think before you acted. Now, I tell you, don't stop and think. I tell you, act upon your instant thought. You know, don't stop and try to figure it out, but act upon your instant thought. Now, most people are not ready to act on their instant thought. Why are they not ready to act on their instant thought?
Because they had missed the training.
They have not taught themselves to believe in their instant thought. They have not taught themselves to believe that... Sylvia, do you take your schmutzig handkerchief and put it in your drawer?
No.
Where do you put it?
In the hamper.
You put it in the hamper. Well, now, what if you put it in your drawer instead of the hamper inadvertently when you weren't thinking? Why would you do that? Why would you ever do that?
Because I haven't trained myself.
You hadn't trained yourself. Mm-hmm. And why didn't you train yourself? Is there anybody who wouldn't let you train yourself?
No.
Or that you're not allowed to train yourself?
No.
You didn't train yourself. Now, you see, Ingeborg has been going around here for months saying that she's not allowed to do this and she's not allowed to do that. Well, what she's doing, she's training herself so that she's not allowed to do it because she doesn't really want to do it. Now, if Ingeborg wants to do anything, what's she going to do?
She says, I'm doing this and I'm doing that.
She going to what?
She's going to put the causes in motion.
Yeah, she's going to put the cause in motion that...
That she's doing
That she
things.
Is able to do whatever
anything.
She wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
You see, but the thing is, you don't really want to do it, and that's why you say, nobody lets me do it. And this is what people say. And little children, they say, Mama doesn't want me to do that. Mama, well, what they didn't want to do it in the first place. And so it's an excuse. We do not live in a world which has the word
no
excuse in it. We do not live in a world that has the word excuse in it. If we live in a world that has the word excuse in it, we'll be using excuses for everything, even things that we don't want. Now, you are given a plate full of chocolate chip cookies, you know, and they're so good. And so you take one, and then you take two, and then you push the plate aside because you don't want to take any more because you know that you've had enough. And then you reach for another one, and you say, won't someone please come and help me take this plate away? And you won't let me have them. You won't let me have them. Well, your own self is making this decision, and you're blaming it. You're blaming it on somebody else, not because it's true, but because you are blaming it on somebody else because you're not strong enough to stand up for your own decisions. So now, you want to stand up for your own decisions. Now, what are your own decisions?
I'm in charge.
I'm in charge. Now, where did you ever hear that? I'm in charge. That's what it's all about. Ingeborg's in charge when she wakes up in the middle of the night and she wants to go to the bathroom. She better be, or she's going to be flat on the floor. Or what else? Or she'll go out the door and go out into the woods somewhere.
Well, this happened to Ivo.
Ingeborg, if you do not train yourself, if you do not put the cause in motion, when you wake up, I am going to the bathroom. I am going to the kitchen to get a cup of coffee. Or I am, whatever you're doing, if you don't train yourself, and the training is the big thing. Now, Daniel has a couple of young boys who have had all sorts of training, and they're smart kids. They're extremely brilliant kids. And they have given them the habit of saying, I don't like to help around the house. Okay. Now, why don't they like to help around the house? Because Mama says they don't like to help around the house. Papa says they don't like to help around the house. So they say they don't like to help around the house. Now, if somebody were to go around that house and talk to those kids and say, oh, my kids are so wonderful. They just love to help around the house. You know, I'm just so delighted when I come home and I find that the kids have put their clothes away and that they've done all these things. It's so comforting to me because, you know, I work a long, hard schedule, and I don't mind putting their clothes away because just to touch their clothes makes me feel good, you know. But when they do it, it shows me so much unconditional love. And let it go at that. Let it go. And then another time, say something similar. Say something similar. And pretty soon, the mother, father, whoever, is planting thoughts in the children's minds. And the kids are 17, 18, and they're planting thoughts in the children's minds of these beneficial things for them. Now, Sylvia, when you live alone in your house, who puts your clothes away?
I.
Who puts your house in order?
I.
Who polishes the floor and dusts and does all that stuff?
I.
Don't you have a mommy to do it for you?
No.
Don't you have somebody else to do it for you? No. You see? So, what would Sylvia's pad look like if she didn't take care of it? If mothers don't teach their children the joy of maintaining their home and putting things away and doing it, the children will never do it for themselves. The children, as they go out into the world for themselves, will live in a pigsty. And that's perfectly okay. But how do you train them not to live in a pigsty when you haven't done it for years? Well, you start where, Ellen?
With myself. Now.
You start right now. Yes, and Ellen, I think you said that more significantly than you know. You start with yourself. If you live in a pigsty, you can be sure your children will too. If Daddy throws his clothes on the floor, you can be sure that his sons are going to do the same thing. And now, it may go against their nature to do it, and because they want to keep their clothes nice. But Daddy throws his on the floor, so they throw theirs on the floor. It's not that Daddy is right and they should follow Daddy's procedure, but it's that Daddy does it and they're going to do it because they want to be like Daddy in every way. And so if Daddy puts his clothes away and hangs his clothes up, that's great. And if along the way Daddy finds anybody else's clothing lying around, he picks them up too. Not, oh, I got to pick up everybody's clothes, I got to do these things. He picks it up because it's
his nature.
It's his nature. And then what happens to the children?
They follow.
It follows if it's their nature. Now, can we all do that? This is what Daniel is doing now with his sons. He's showing them by example and by respect for himself and respect for his wife and respect for the family that he puts his things away. And he puts them away nicely. He doesn't take his hat, his old pull-on-top hat, and put it on top of his dresser. He puts it in the closet or he puts it in the dresser drawer. Because pretty soon, if you put everything on top of your dresser becomes a great big mess and everything is out of order. So, but learning these habits, now I'm going to say this for you to listen to it. Learning these habits is learning these habits. Learning these habits is learning these habits. Learning these habits is learning these habits. As you apply these habits in your life, they become part of your nature. Now, they may always have been your nature. They say that an animal doesn't mess in its bed. It goes out of its bed and it goes out of its nest. If it's in its nest with its brothers and sisters, it doesn't mess in there. Well, in the beginning, the mother has to help clean up the works, but the thing is they're taught that they don't mess in their nest. And so it's part of their nature.
It's amazing, yeah.
It's part of their nature not to mess in your nest. And we get out of that nature by carelessness, by throwing our clothing on top of the dresser or throwing it on the floor and so forth. Now, you are here at the University of Healing not because you're here for vacation. You're here for a job. You're here for the job of training your consciousness, training your thinking program, not your thoughts, but thinking your thinking program, to accomplish whatever you want. Sylvia, you have just finished the course on levitation. Go. Levitate. Well, I don't want to. I really don't feel like levitating right now. Well, what's the work about it? You don't really believe in it. If you believed in it, you just do it. It's not work. It's not work to levitate once you know how. It's not work to think good thoughts once you've trained yourself always to think good thoughts. There is everything in this world which is good and everything which is fine. But this stuff over here is non-beneficial. This stuff is beneficial. Now, here are the non-beneficial... Shut up. You don't have to talk about the non-beneficial things, you know? You don't have to mention one single non-beneficial thing. You don't have to empower in your thought one non-beneficial... You may leave it alone and empower in your thinking and your habit-making and your gathering in for yourself the beneficial thoughts. Now, I have said this many times and will say it many times again because it's worth repeating. What do we want to experience in our life? Ellen. She's trying to read my lips. Beneficial thoughts.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
We want to experience beneficial thoughts in our life. So what must we do, Ingeborg?
Thinking beneficial thoughts.
Exactly. We must think beneficial thoughts if we want to have beneficial thoughts in our life. Now, are we going to have beneficial thoughts in our life if we think the unbeneficial thoughts? What are we going to have in our life if we think the unbeneficial thoughts?
Then they are there.
The unbeneficial thoughts. We are empowering them because all is good. The bad, the good, all is good. It sounds irascible and unbelievable. All is good because nothing can be created that's not good. Okay. Now, the rain is beautiful, but the monsoons are a little heavy duty. They come down, whoosh, and they flood the territories and wash out the towns and wash out the city. And, I mean, that's not beneficial, would you say?
Mm.
Okay, now, today, I proclaim as balanced weather day in India. Okay? I proclaim balanced weather day. And then, Sylvia, what does that mean?
Gentle rains.
No?
Gentle rain.
Gentle rain. And sufficient, but not too much. And what else? A gentle sun. A gentle breeze. Gentle weather, totally.
Balanced weather.
Balanced, that's a good word for it. I create balanced weather for India. Today and...
Now.
Forevermore. Now it's done. But now, you say, boy, isn't that a heavy-duty statement? Wouldn't the people of India love you? No, they wouldn't love you. They are in the habit of living in the non-beneficial weather and making do. Making do. What does Ellen do when she walks out of her San Moritz chalet, and it has been a sunny day instead of snowing? She's not very happy because she went up to San Moritz to go skiing, and if there's no snow to ski on, she's not very happy. So the snow comes down, and it's wonderful, and she's skiing, and Ellen say, oh, goody, 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 the snow and the ski and the snow. And then this man leaves his farm. He leaves the house to go out to the barn. And he goes in the barn and he feeds his animals. And then on the way back from the barn to the house, a tremendous, tremendous blizzard comes up that you cannot see even an inch in front of yourself. And you are just totally lost as to what your direction is. Now, if this farmer says to himself, I am lost, he's lost. If this farmer says, nope, I'm going to stand still for a minute, get my bearings, okay, my house is there. And he goes right to his house, This happens time and time and time and time again in Switzerland, in countries where they have many mountainous areas and blizzards and snowstorms. But the moment that person is frightened, that moment that that person is afraid they're lost, they cannot see, or they put a string or a rope from the house to the barn, and then something happens that the rope gets busted or blown away or something, you know, that can happen. But if they say, I know. Now, what would an intelligent man do if he were not too intelligent? And now that sounds irascible. But if a farmer did not believe he knew where the house was, what would he do? Bitte. He would stay in the barn. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Why go out in the blizzard and get lost if you believe you're going to get lost? You stay in the barn.
Yeah.
But if you know where your house is, you have it linked
inside
to yourself. There's no mistake.
Mm.
You've done this hundreds of times before. In every snowstorm and every blizzard that comes along, you just know right where the house is. You just know. And you have no trouble. That's building confidence in your thought. That farmer, if he would apply that same thought of knowing right where his house was and going to it each time, if he would apply that thought to the idea that he is independently wealthy, you know, not bad, huh? Or that his wife is whole and perfect when she has some illness or something. And what is it most people think, and God Sadunk, what is it most people think when they're going to have a baby?
Have a healthy, wonderful, beautiful baby.
Have a healthy, wonderful, beautiful baby. Now, what if you have in your family somewhere, this is going to be your number one baby, somewhere in your family there has been not healthy, wonderful, beautiful babies, and you think about that when you're getting ready to have your baby, what's going to happen? That baby is going to take on all of the unhappy thoughts you have in your mind. And you are to fault. You are to blame. And it's not nice to say you're to blame, but you are. Because there's nobody else thinking those thoughts. That baby, so to speak, didn't know that its aunt and grandma and what have you had problems. And it needed not to know that some of the other babies in the family that were born kind of tough. What do they think in India? What do my friends, the blacks, think? Popcorn. They have babies like popcorn with no problem. But some of them are getting so intellectual, they're thinking about the problems. And when they get very intellectual and think about the problem, then they have problems in giving birth. They have problems in illness and things like that. These things should be as far from our consciousness as ever can be. By being far from our consciousness is on the positive and the negative, the undesirable things we do not give any power to by our thought. Now, do you have the ability to do that?
Yes.
Do you have the desire to do that?
Yes.
And the answer to the second question is no. No, you don't have the desire. Ellen?
Yes, I have to.
You don't have the desire because you listen to naughty movies. You listen to naughty motion pictures that are human, that are caring, and the wife is crying because she's having a baby and stuff, and these, you know, all these silly things. Yes, Ellen. You listen to these movies, you think it's family movies, you know, and it's the caring, the sensitivity, and no, the triumphant family movies are what you want to see, where they say, we are faced with a circumstance and we can handle it perfectly. We are faced with this problem and we look at it as a solution. Now, we are faced with this problem, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, and now, how many oh dears you got there? How many times you're going to be spending your time in the problem instead of the solution? Okay, the problem comes up. There's no milk on the table. What's the solution?
To get up and pick up the milk.
Pick it up what? I said there's no milk on the table. Why do you make a big thing pick it up at the store?
No, in the fridge.
Well, you didn't say that.
Oh, get up and pick up the milk, I said.
Well, Ellen, that you're going to pick it up, you're going to pick it up at the store.
Oh, right.
You don't pick it up at the fridge.
Okay.
You get it from the fridge. You don't pick it up from the fridge.
Yes.
I don't think anybody ever picks anything up from the fridge.
All right.
They get it from there. Okay, now, you see, our language is very important because your habitual language, and habitual language is very significant, but your habitual language is a language that has been your stuttering tool all along. Now, you're trying to say the right thing for my question. You're trying to be nice to my answers and stuff like that. And don't do that. The minute I say anything, do your thing. Say your thing. Now, because if your thing isn't my thing, I haven't taught you very well. You understand? If your thing, like Ingeborg has had the tendency, every time I would make a statement, Ingeborg, all is in divine order, all is in pure white order, and I give her a rotation of words to use, I give her a rotation of words to do, and then she puts it in her own words. And I said, don't do that yet. Don't do that until you have memorized the pattern leading you to good habits. And once you've memorized the pattern leading you to good habits, then you can go in any direction you want. Because you will be going with good habits.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be going in a good pattern. And I fight with you, and I fight with you, and I fight with you all on this here. Say it my way. Say it my... 2 times 2 is 4. 2 times 2 is 4. 2 times 2 is 4. I will not say 2 times 2 is 4. I'm going to say 2 times 2 is 4. I'm going to reverse them. You know, you said 2 times 2 is 4. I'm going to reverse them. 2 times 2 is 4. Don't do that. Because, Herb, I never heard anybody explain it like that. But, no, you will never hear anybody explain it like that. Because people don't fight 2 times 2.
Yeah.
They take 3 times 2 or 2 times 3, but not 2 times 2. And 1 times 1 or 1 minus 1 or 1 plus 1 or whatever. You see, there are certain things you don't fight. And the 2 times 2 is not a problem. But when we get onto the other areas, then you get into the problem. Because you haven't learned to have a balanced approach to your own habits. All of your habits, all of your thinking, all of the things that makes up your life, that makes up your program. Now, this is what I seek to share with you here at the University of Healing in the Absolute Monastery. I seek to share it with you, and I seek to tell you about it. But it's up to you whether you go on with it. Now, if Ingeborg wakes up tomorrow morning and she says, where am I? Am I in that damned hospital? Or am I home? Or am I where? You know, never say damned hospital. Everything is good. But am I, where am I? Well then, Ingeborg, your brain is just saying to you, settle down. Say, I am peace. And then look around you. Oh, how about that? Somebody left the porch light on, and I thought it was a bathroom light. So I went to the porch for the bathroom instead of the bathroom for the bathroom. But you see, let's just settle down. Get yourself balanced. And when you get yourself balanced, fine. Now, Sylvia's sleeping in a room which is totally different from the one in her house in the Citadel. And in the Citadel, she's between a bookcase and the front door. So sometimes she goes out the front door, you know. But sometimes she tries to push the bookcase over. But usually she goes out the alley that she's made. But she's done it very nicely to organize her house the way she does it. And if Sylvia comes over here and says, where's my bookcase? Who stole my bookcase? Where's my front door? And she said, I had 2 doors in there. And you see, these are things we have to settle down. And it sounds silly, and sounds funny, and sounds stupid when I say it this way, but that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. We want to build good habits in ourselves for good results. Now, if Sylvia did nothing more than what I'm going to suggest, she would be in absolute paradise every moment of her life. If Sylvia would do what I'm going to suggest for herself, every moment of her life, she would be in absolute paradise all her life. Now, Sylvia, if you would say, all is in divine order, at every single moment of your life, every single thought, every time you open your eyes, you close your eyes, you know, all is in divine order. You say, oh, wow, that gets a little heavy, you know, and after a while I get sick of it, barf it. And no, all is in divine order. All is in divine order. Because once you get over the hump, once you get over the hump of forcing yourself to say all is in divine order at all times, once you get over that hump, then it becomes natural. It becomes a habit for you, and you do it unconsciously but selectively under all circumstances, every moment of the day, and pretty soon everything you do is
divine order. That's
divine order.
So simple. It's just pure dedication.
Now, is your purse always in divine order? It should be, but you know, no, sometimes it lacks a little change, you know. Sometimes you got just all $100 bills or $1,000 bills, you know, and you want some change because people don't always have change for a $100 bill. So, is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, I thought it would be. But now, you see, this is what you do. All is in divine order. I have change in my purse. Sounds silly, but no. You see, all is in divine order. All is in divine order. Because, you see, when you're saying all is in divine order, you're not just thinking all is in divine order. Your mind is off on 100 tangents, and knowingly all those tangents are beneficial. But you're bringing in the sheaves. You're bringing in all the blessings of the field, all the crop. You're harvesting. And as you harvest, you're saying all is in divine order. All is in divine order. My purse is in divine order. That's not bad, huh?
No.
And my car is in divine order. And my house is in divine order. My plumbing is in divine order. You know, everything is in divine order. And it is. Herb, why did you mention plumbing? My plumbing's in divine order. I can say anything I want. But the thing is your plumbing in divine order?
Yes.
So, what's your problem?
No problem.
See, and you see, this is what you want to stay with.
But this is what I told you the other day. It's also so good to say for my body.
Ellen?
And divine order.
Ellen?
Mm-hmm.
What did I ask Sylvia to do?
To say every minute I'm divine order, or all is in divine order.
And think what you will, but say, yes. I am divine order. All is in divine order. All is in divine order. Ellen?
That's really...
All is in divine
order.
When would you not include your body in that? Do you live in the temple of the living God?
Yeah, all is all.
All is all.
All is all.
All is in divine order.
I find when
but
I
see,
say...
don't go making up stories on me now, saying instead of all in divine order, all is all.
No, because then I don't have to separate body and
all is in divine order.
Well, yeah, you see, the thing is, you got other problems, and you're saying all is in divine order, and so you're bringing other things into your thinking when you're saying that, and they will balance out as you keep on saying all is in divine order. Ellen, she let the cat out of the bag. Ellen has not been thinking her body is in divine order. Ellen has not been thinking her body is in divine order, and that's why she brings it up right now. And if Ellen were always saying, all is in divine order, all is in divine order. Ellen, are your kittens in divine order?
Yes.
Yes. She has no trouble saying that. None at all. Is your puppy in divine order?
Yes.
Is your house in divine order?
Yes.
Is your house always heated beautifully?
Yes.
Is your house always a lovely place to be?
Yes.
Do you always enjoy your house? Do you enjoy having people come visit you?
Yes.
Or are you going to maintain your block around the house where people don't want to come and visit you?
Oh, no.
What's that?
No.
You don't say no. You say my house is?
Is.
I always have open house.
Open house, yes.
Yeah. I always have open house.
Ooh.
And you, Ingeborg, do you always have open house?
Yes.
Is your room... always in order, so that when people come in there, don't answer me. This is for you to think about. Is your room always in divine order?
Yes,
so when
it
people
is.
Come in there, they find it to be orderly. And you're a 17-year-old boy, a girl, and you put your clothes away, or you don't put them away, or you stuff them in the closet and jam the door closed, you know? Yeah. You see, there are all sorts of ways of making order. But the best way of making order, Ellen, the best way of making order is to get rid of things you don't use and you don't need, so that your closet is maybe 4 or 5 items, maybe 10, but 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And then
I agree.
You too. And,
oh, yes.
And then as you go in your closet, it's easy to put things away. You don't have to push clothes apart to put a blouse and a shirt in or something like that. But this is it. I empty my closet every now and then. And then after I empty it, because I haven't been wearing the stuff, then I need to wear it, so I have to go back out and bring the back in again, you know. But that's all. It's an orderliness. It's an orderliness. And I really should have two closets, you know, and I should have them on a roly-poly. And this is a closet for this season, and this is a closet for this season. And many people have that.
Oh, yeah.
What did they call it? Mothballs? Remember, I don't know whether you foreigners put things in mothballs.
Oh, yes.
But
yes.
In America, we would put things in mothballs in summer, you know, and we'd take our nice woolen clothes and stuff like that and put it in mothballs to keep the moths from getting into, and then have it in the closet, you know. And then when winter came, we'd bring in the stuff out, and we'd all smell like mothballs. Ah. We'd have to wear it for a while. But you see, but that's orderliness. That's orderliness. And Ellen?
Yeah?
This is the only thing that you're interested in paying any attention to. That's orderliness. And that's another thing. When I share with you, I'm taking away from my time from reading my murder mysteries and things like that. But I'm taking away from my time, my personal time from doing things, to share with you. And whenever I take away from my time to share with you, I would like to have your 100% attention. Not looking at the cats as they walk by, and hey, aren't they cute? And not looking at this, not looking at that, not involved in any other thought, not needing to get up and have a cup of coffee, because you can have a cup of coffee after we're done. There's no big problem about that. You're not denied anything. But give me your attention. Now, I'm going to say something else. When you call upon me, I give you 100% of my attention. Like Daniel said yesterday, Herb, I love you. He says, you give me your full attention. And you say things to me that I have never heard said in that way before. And this is good. This is good. But you see, this is where you are. This is where you are. I respect myself enough to give 100% of my attention to whoever it is I'm speaking to, because I respect myself, not I respect them. I don't want them thinking about me and saying, oh, that Herb, you talk to him and it's like talking to nothing, you know. The words don't even sink in any place. He doesn't respond to you at all. He is as though he's not even listening to you. And would you want someone to say that about you? No. So when people talk to me, I give them my attention. But I expect the same attention from them, which is very hard, because when I talk, I give you some pretty interesting things sometimes, I think. So now, think of this. Think of this, and think of this, how you're going to apply this in your life. This is a school. We are here to train. You're welcome to leave here at any time and go about your life, as many of our students have. They've taken as much as they could handle, and then they go off and they start teaching it. And they didn't realize that they were getting the cake, but they weren't getting the icing. Because the icing is what comes as we continually work together. But once you've got the icing, and you found your flavor, what you enjoy, you don't need any more. People don't need to be at the monastery, at the university here, forever and ever and ever. You're here only so long as until you get the message, which is your message, the message for you. And then you start living it, and then all of a sudden you're off on your journey of excitement. Because life is exciting, and we are here to have a wonderful, exciting life. And if we don't have a wonderful, exciting life, well, you might as well be dust. I don't say 6 foot under, just dust. Poof. You're nothing. You're here on planet Earth to be something, not nothing. I love you.
Love you. Love you.
Love you.
Thank you.